This one lay.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Another mass shooting in the U.S. 10 people have been killed in L.A. near a Chinese lunar celebration event. What has become a staple of life in America, it appears. And the question still remains, why does America tolerate mass shootings that are taking place due to firearm possessions? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at this recurring crisis there and what role the gun lobby, the NRA, has, along with why U.S. politicians and the U.S. president himself have failed to stop this phenomenon. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of the program. Richard Becker, an anti-war activist from Answer Coalition, joins us from San Francisco. Also joining us, Margaret Kimberly, co-founder of the Black Agenda Report, who joins us from New York. Welcome to you both. Another sad day for the U.S. when it comes to mass shootings there, Richard Becker. 10 dead in gun violence near the Chinese Lunar Year celebrations. And the way that this was described was a shooter with a machine gun carrying a large number of rounds, or carrying a number of rounds of ammunition so that he could reload, is what how he was sighted during action. What is your initial reaction to this?
Well, it's horrific. It's just horrific. And, you know, we've seen the mass killings now in Uvalde, in Buffalo, very near where I was from originally, but all over the country. And it's true that I think there's been 30 already in this year, in 2023. And, you know, it's a... You also have to think when we hear this is the latest reports and we see these terrible casualties and the injuries of those who survive, life-changing injuries in many cases. And, you know, immediately what I was thinking today was thinking back to 2005 when George W. Bush passed a law that was called the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act. And what it did was basically say that the arms makers are exempt. They are protected by the federal government from being having any responsibility for what their products are used for. And there's no doubt that they know what their products are being used for, because the huge number of weapons that are being produced and sold inside of the United States are bound to end in like what we've seen again today. And the U.S. government has protected, it has carved out protections. It is carved out protections for the arms makers. It's carved out protection from criminal liability or going to jail for any of those responsible for the opioid crisis. It protects the rich and the big corporate interests. And then says that, you know, the leaders come back and talk about, you know, people who have suffered these losses and these tragedies are in our thoughts and prayers. I mean, it's the cynicism is incredible.
Okay, since you talked about the number of arms being produced or guns being produced, I have to then go to that stat, because stats speak for themselves. So, Margaret Kimberly, the gun ownership in the U.S., it says, based on the latest, the U.S. ratio of 120.5 firearms per 100 residents, which is up from 88 per 100 in the year from the year 2011. But then more interestingly was when the NRA, based on a simple Google search, which is that National Rifle Association, in information related to that, it said that the number of privately owned firearms has more than doubled from about 192 million to more than 405 million. 405 million, including more than 167 million handguns. Okay, so there's money in it, there's profits that are being made, but the fact that these gun manufacturers are exempt from accountability, they have to be protected. Are we looking at the NRA being that modem or that channel for their protection?
Well, you know, they're not the only corporate interests that are protected from any liability. Vaccine makers are protected from liability. Airlines have great protection from liability. They don't even have to protect the country when they don't schedule flights and cancel flights. So it's part of what's happening in this country where corporate interests are in control. We have an oligarchy in this country, so it could be the NRA, it could be Big Pharma, it could be any number of entities. But the big problem here goes back to the beginnings of American history. This is a settler colonial state, and this mentality that this is a country to be conquered, that other people are to be subjugated, is one that still resonates with millions of people. I also think that as this country is a failed state, that is the hard truth of the matter, as conditions, living conditions for people deteriorate, as people become more and more insecure economically, I believe those people who are frail psychologically are inspired to act on their worst impulses. And I think every incident leads to another. These people who need help inspire one another. So when there's one mass shooting, another generally follows fairly quickly. And so I think this combination of this mentality that says it's okay to be violent, it's beneficial to be violent, and you can't separate the domestic from the international. You can't have a country with a huge military budget which claims the right to kill people all around the world. You cannot be surprised when individuals feel like they have the right to kill when they want to.
Okay. I'm interested in your, you mentioned psychological problems. I'm interested as to why you chose that to being one of the factors for what you just said.
Well, I think it's obvious. There are people, many people in this country who are just unhinged, who are, it's not a technical term, who are out of their minds. And I think the combination of the deterioration in life, for example, there are fewer and fewer living wage jobs. The safety net that we have is always threatened. People can't count on work. They can't count on having the ability to care for themselves. There's more and more insecurity. And I think when you combine that with people who, I mean, and they always exist, do they not? People who need mental health care. And then you combine that with this country that's historically been very violent and where the political system protects this type of violence and others. These people now are, I believe, inspired. And when you don't handle it, when there was no crackdown, then, of course, each one inspires the next.
All right. So let's dive into that issue, if we can, because it's pretty shocking, Richard Becker, what our guests there touched on when it comes to the number of deaths overall, which needs to be mentioned here. We're looking at 40,000 roughly, or between 40 to 45,000 that are dying every year in the U.S. because of firearms in one form or another, which translates into more than 110 Americans that die every day, okay? But what's very shocking and at the same time very interesting, but more shocking than that, is with the breakdown. When you take a look at the breakdown, you have a little over 19,000 based on the homicides that happen, but 24,000, which is more than homicides, is because of suicides. That's pretty shocking. I mean, I don't know if many people are aware of that. They know that U.S. is a dangerous place, and of course firearms is a problem that the U.S. has, but not many people, I think, are aware that it's because of suicides. Are the reasons given, first of all, what do you think of that? Are the reasons given there by our guest, Margaret, reasons for people to take their lives? And what does that say about the state of mental health of many Americans in the U.S.?
Well, yes, I completely agree with what Ms. Kimberly said. And the, you know, we live in a very atomized society. People are on their own. And if you're lucky and, you know, you have a good income and, you know, your family has stability and so forth, You know, still you can run into a lot of problems. But if you don't have those things, and particularly if you don't have income, if you become...
Richard Becker, I think we lost you. Okay, let me go to you, Margaret Kimberly. Margaret Kimberly, we were talking about this shocking stat about the suicides, which you touched on. Now, based on what we're looking at, there are pros and cons on this. Advocates for these stricter gun laws say that, you know, you need to have lawmakers devoting some resources for people in order to prevent them from taking their lives with firearms. At the same time, you have gun control opponents who have framed the gun violence as a symptom of a broader mental health problem, which obviously shows that they say there's a crisis there, and it's not the life being taken away is not due to the firearm, it's due to the person. What would you say to them?
Well, I think it's both. You know, we have these people have easy access to these guns with large magazines, which can fire many bullets, which no one, I believe, has any reason to own. There's no reason. These are military grade weapons, anyone can get their hands on them when there's no justification for it. Now, the opponents of gun control will say that they may be a marksman or it's target shooting or hunting. I don't understand why, though, these cannot be regulated. But the NRA, an organization I do not support at all, has a lot of support around the country. So I think it's a combination of two things. The statistic you gave about how many gun fatalities are caused by suicides is a huge number.
Right.
And I think to the point I was making before, that's something that isn't talked about very much, the suicides that happen with guns. But as the other guest said, we have this atomized society, people on their own, worsening economic conditions, a political system that does not address the needs of the people, but only addresses the needs of the oligarchy. All of these things combine to create a kind of thinking among millions of people, people who see other people as their enemy, people who don't see any common cause with others, and then may have some mental health problem. And then, of course, when it's not taken care of, when nothing changes, each act inspires the next one. So I hate to say this, but it's inevitable that we're going to have these mass shootings until something changes. But we live in a society where the system doesn't help the people in so many other ways, so we should not be surprised about this either.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, we have Richard Becker back with us also. Richard Becker, when you had that school shooting that happened in Texas that left 19 children dead and two adults also as part of that, basically 21 people to have been killed, it was very, how can I say, it's very telling what the U.S. President Joe Biden said when he said, or posed as a question when he said, when are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? What does that say about the gun lobby?
Well, the gun lobby is quite powerful. I mean, many, many politicians have received $1 million or multi-million-dollar donations over the years. Mitt Romney, who's considered one of the moderate Republicans, I think, is the leader with more than $13 million in donations from the gun lobby. And, you know, it's very true that a huge number of weapons are already dispersed in the population. And in order to begin to halt this, there has to be consequences for the gun makers. And, you know, and there haven't been. You know, when the opioid makers like Purdue Pharmacy would send a million opioid pills to a town of 300 people, they didn't think that, you know, somehow those were all going to be used for, you know, for pain purposes, or that there were going to be those kind of health problems in that town that required that number. No, they knew that this was going to go into the market, into the illegal market, to the black market, and become immensely powerful and immensely profitable. And it did. And the same thing goes for the weapons makers. They know that these guns that are being distributed in such vast quantities throughout the United States, and such an increase in the number of guns in circulation domestically, that that's going to mean more mass shootings, more mass killings. But they are protected. They are protected the same way that Margaret Kimberly mentioned, so many other industries are, so many other capitalist industries are.
Okay, the question of accessibility is very important over here. Now, some thought when Joe Biden signed that historic law that's said to be the one of the strongest, if not the strongest, gun control laws last year, was going to somehow put a dent into what has occurred in terms of mass shootings or firearms, deaths as a result of firearms, but that did not happen. So, you know, they're asking for some of the proposals, stricter gun control laws, universal background checks to be stronger, or banning certain types of weapons. Okay, these are all sound good, but they haven't worked, even though there's been strides made in it. But the question of accessibility, I think, is the bigger problem. And Margaret Kimberly, I don't know what part of New York you are at, but I'm sure you're familiar with the Bronx. And I'm going to just name an example. Co-op City in the Bronx. And this is a real example of the way guns are accessible. Co-op City in the Bronx, one of the streets that is not even in a very bad neighborhood. You have people that are just hanging out, and you can go to them and say, "What's up?" They say, "What do you need?" And if you say you need a handgun, they come back and tell you, "We'll have it for you within the hour." Okay, that's the reality of what's going on in the streets. How can that then be stopped? I mean, you know, what can the police do? Because it goes back to the streets and the U.S. being awash with guns. So there needs to be a breaking point there. How can that be addressed?
Well, it's interesting. I'm in New York City. It's interesting you mentioned New York. You know, handgun laws vary by state. And New York State has very strict gun laws, except guns come from other states that aren't very far away. So if you go, I don't know, drive 4 or 5 hours away to Virginia, which has very loose gun regulations, almost none, that is where people get guns and then bring them back to New York.
What do you mean none? I'm sorry to jump in. Why loose and why none? That doesn't make sense, does it?
Because people, it not doesn't make sense to me, but there are people across the country who, they don't want gun regulations. This is something where there is a divide, a popular divide, and there are places where people believe in their right to bear arms, as they call it, their right to own firearms as powerful as they want, as many as they want. And the people who own guns actually own a lot of guns, which is why there's so many per person, at least one per person. So you have people in these states, people run for office promising not to enact gun legislation. So you have part of the population who are quite happy not to have any regulations, but their decisions impact those of us, like in New York, who do want gun regulation. So people can come to New York City, to the Bronx, to Brooklyn, to any part of the city with guns from other places, and they can do with them whatever they choose. So even in a state which has stricter laws, handguns are still very easily accessible, even though that access is not legal.
So is that the case, Richard Becker? I mean, based on your viewpoint, that I don't know what is it like in San Francisco, but that you can maybe travel outside of San Francisco, maybe go to some part of L.A., maybe go to, I don't know, projects where the guns might be available there on the streets readily if you were to peruse the neighborhood and for the right price get one. Is that how it stands? Because you two are at the opposite end of the U.S., one in the east, one in the west.
Yeah, and you know, I have to say, I'm from upstate New York, western part of New York State. I haven't lived there in a long time, but I knew a lot of people. I didn't do hunting myself, but I knew a lot of people who were hunters. You don't go hunting with a semi-automatic rifle or a handgun. That's illegal to do. That's not what it's for. So you have to ask, well, what is it for? What are they producing? What is the and a lot of the gun industry, by the way, is based in Connecticut. A lot, and they're very powerful in Connecticut politics. And so they're shipping out all these weapons that, you know, supposedly have some good purpose for them or, you know, healthy purpose. And they know they're not. They really know that. And as far as California goes, San Francisco, okay, San Francisco probably has less guns per capita than the average city. I'm pretty sure it does. But there are gun shows. There's not only gun dealers, there's gun shows. You can go to Walmart and get guns, and gun shows happen. And one of the things that the gun lobby has resisted is having strict background checks at gun shows, where, you know, they'll be like hundreds of gun makers or gun dealers, not the makers, but the dealers more, in like a big place like a convention center. And people go around, they look at them, and they buy them. And, you know, there can be some background checks, but it's very, very loose and easy to avoid any limitations on your ability to gain weapons, either in the black market, either, you know, illegally or legally.
Even politicians have not been immune to this, Margaret Kimberly. I was looking down a list of U.S. Congress members killed or wounded in office. And I'm quite surprised that it goes all the way back to the year 1789. I'm not going to rehash all the different congressmen, which is broken down by their party affiliation. However, you know, what comes to mind is when Reagan, for example, was shot, or you have other instances of U.S. politicians that are not immune from guns. And yet, the U.S. is still looking at this being a problem. So where do you go from here? I mean, you know, here's another mass shooting, 10 people to have been killed. I'm sorry to say, I think it's going to happen again. And I'm sure that's what people in the administration are telling each other. But then what are they going to do about it?
Well, it's interesting. You quoted President Biden, who said, when are we going to do something, as if he has nothing to do with what sort of legislation is passed in the country as president. But he knows, having been in politics for decades, he knows that there's a lot of support for the right to own any gun you want, as powerful as you want. He knows it would be tough politically to do.
Sorry
and
to jump in.
Sorry to
jump in,
Margaret Kimberly. And others evade responsibility.
My bad. We're just out of time. I did not note the time there, but I do apologize. Margaret Kimberly, co-founder of the Black Agenda Report. Thank you anyways. Richard Becker, thank you. Anti-war activist from the Answer Coalition. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitavoy and the team, it's goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright. and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll try to have a look at the commentary of Chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode. Now let's listen to 137th verse up to the 140th one.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
أتتركون فيما هاهنا آمنين.
Will you be left in what is here, secure from death?
في جنات وعيون.
Within gardens and springs, and fields of crops and palm trees with softened fruit, and you carve out of the mountains homes with skill.
فَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ وَأَطِيعُونَ.
So fear Allah and obey me.
Dear listeners, now let's listen to the 146th until the 150th verses of Chapter Shu'ara. Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing these verses of Chapter Shu'ara. أَتُتْرَكُونَ فِيمَا هَهُنَا آمِنِينَ في جنات وعيون وزروع ونخل طلعها هضيم وتنحتون من الجبال بيوتا فارهين. Will you be left secure in the enjoyment of all that you have here? في جنات وعيون, in the gardens and springs, وزروع ونخل طلعها هضيم, and the cornfields and date palms with slender spathes, وتنحتون من الجبال بيوتا فارهين, and you hew houses skillfully out of the mountains exultingly. These are what their prophet started to criticize them with. When the bounties of security, finance, and welfare are not accompanied with obedience from the Immaculate Imam, they are working as a preparation for mischief and corruption. So this is how their prophet started to criticize them. Their prophet, Prophet Salih, started to criticize them. إِذْ قَالَ لَهُمْ أَخُوهُمْ صَالِحْ أَلَا تَتَّقُونَ. This people of Thamud were doing these things. They thought that they will be left secure in the enjoyment of what they had built. فِي جَنَّاتٍ وَعُيُونَ. So they had many blessings based upon these verses. They had many material blessings, but they were proud of them. This is the point the Holy Quran mentions. أَتُتْرَكُونَ فِيمَا هَهُنَا آمِنِينَ. This verse, asked by the Prophet, means that you should not be proud of what you have here. You must pay attention to the impermanence of this world, to the inconstancy of what you have here. And this is the direct reason of taqwa, because at the end of these verses, the Prophet says, their prophet says, فَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ وَاطِعُونَ. Be in awe of Allah and obey me. So this thought is one of the reasons they are not in awe of the Almighty Allah.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So they had many blessings. They had the blessings of material world. They had the blessings of welfare and security. تَنْحِتُونَ مِنَ الْجِبَالِ بُيُوتًا فَارِهِينَ. They skillfully make houses out of the mountains, exultingly. They joyfully made that. They had civilization. They knew how to build these houses. They had good fields. They knew how to farm pretty well. But these bounties, these security, finance, and welfare, they were not enriched with what we call obedience from the Immaculate Imam. So that is why all these blessings, all these ni'mah of the Almighty Allah, they made them far away from the Almighty Allah. They worked as preparation for mischief and corruption. And so this is how the Prophet asks them. He asks them whether they imagine that they are going to remain safe. He asks them whether they think that based upon these houses they have built, they are going to be secure. They're going to have these welfare and security up until the very last moment. They're not going to die. This is what they asked them. He asked them whether they imagine that they will remain safe and sound fully in those security and affluence of bounties forever. Do you think that this material and negligent life is eternal? You must not be proud of the things you have built. You must pay important attention to impermanence and inconstancy of this life you're living in. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Goodbye. But for me, worry ends when faith begins.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Of high school students have hit the streets of the Italian capital to rally against what they called a school system in grave decay at the service of companies and private interests. The protest took aim at a 2015 school reform named the Good School by then Prime Minister Matteo Renzi. The reform radically transformed the Italian education system, introducing measures including granting more powers to principals, a new national recruitment process for teachers, and obligatory work experience programs for high school students.
The
2015 reform brought private interests into our schools. From that year onwards, the company's interests came first, not our preparation. The rat race had just begun.
The reform has legalized the exploitation of us students. We are obliged to work unpaid for businesses. It's completely useless and unfair.
Students at the rally said the initiative was also called to remember Lorenzo Parelli, an 18-year-old boy who was crushed by a metal bar while on a school training placement at a factory in northern Italy a year ago.
Lorenzo was assassinated by the work placement program. He was working in a factory for free, with no safety measures in place. Two more people have died under that program and simply in the interest of the capitalistic economy.
Recently, an international family caused a stir by saying they had to leave Italy due to the appalling conditions of the education system. While schools vary around the country, statistics show that educational standards overall are consistently below the EU average.
Italy is the country in the European Union that invests the least in public education. According to data by the European Statistical Agency Eurostat, Italy allocates about 8% of its public spending in this field, placing it last after Greece and well below the EU average of about 10%. Max Civili, Rome.
Women scientists and cultural and high-ranking political figures from 28 countries across the globe gathered in the Iranian capital, Tehran, to celebrate the efforts and achievements of women worldwide in a conference dedicated to women of influence. The first of its kind, an initiative of Iran's First Lady, Jamile Alam-ul-Hoda, based on what used to be a ceremony limited to Iranian women in previous years. The conference was aimed at showing appreciation for women of influence while offering support and help for them to grow and promote their ideas, as Ensia Khazali, Iran's Vice President for Women and Family Affairs, stated in her opening remarks. With Anna Hakopian, the wife of Armenia's prime minister, emphasizing the important role women play in promoting tolerance and peaceful coexistence.
About 300 foreign guests are taking part in this conference, 70 of them female officials and politicians. The conference itself is held in three different levels: cultural, scientific, and a special panel for ministers and first ladies.
morning and afternoon sessions were held to provide a platform for the participants in order to share their ideas and valuable experiences regarding the challenges that women face in today's world. The conference wrapped up with Iran's First Lady thanking her guests for supporting the initiative and a special ceremony where the Goharshad Prize was awarded to 7 of the influential women, recognizing their outstanding performance and contributions. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
Already in 2023, 30 refugees have drowned in the Mediterranean Sea as they attempted to reach the EU, according to figures from the United Nations. The EU's border and coast guard agency, Frontex, has in the past been lambasted for pushing back unsafe boats, resulting in deaths. On Thursday, the new head of the agency vowed to end this practice.
I am responsible for the fact that my people don't participate in anything called a pushback. So I think that is absolutely clear. That is the legal framework I work in. So that's it.
According to OLAF, the EU's anti-fraud office, at least 2,000 refugees drowned in the Aegean Sea during 2020 and 2021 as they were pushed back from the EU coastline by Frontex. The agency prevented at least 40,000 asylum seekers from reaching the EU, which blatantly breaks international law. In just 10 months, the EU has welcomed more than 4 million Ukrainian refugees. They are afforded all the same rights as EU citizens. However, if you're from a different part of the world, torn up by Western powers, it's a different story. We visited a shelter for Afghans in Brussels.
Before we come in the Europe, we think the Europe care about women, care about children. Now we come in here, not. They don't care about women, they don't care about children.
When the children go to school, they need food, they need clothes. And for everything, we need to work, so we need the job permit.
There are no such problems for Ukrainians. Of course, that's to be welcomed, but rights groups are asking why the discrimination. EU Home Affairs ministers will meet in Stockholm, Sweden next Thursday to agree on a more effective strategy to deport asylum seekers who don't meet refugee status criteria. Campaigners point out there are no plans to adopt a similar policy for refugees arriving here from Western Ukraine, arguably a relatively safe region. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Could the UK witness a renewed push by religious communities to remove a controversial relationship and sex education, also known as RSE lessons, in British schools? It appears the appetite is huge after an online petition on the UK government website rocketed to well over 130,000 signatures in just a few days.
The petition focuses on tackling just one aspect of RSE, which many parents find concerning, LGBT relationship education, which is a lifestyle not condoned by the three Abrahamic faiths. However, there is a growing anti-RSE movement, which is campaigning for the total removal of RSE from the state curriculum, as activists believe that it is parents who should be teaching their kids about this sensitive subject matter rather than state-funded teachers.
RSE is currently mandatory in British schools, teaching kids about relationships and sex education, including same-gender relations. The lessons have been marred with controversy, sparking Muslim-majority parent protests as far back as 2019. Parents alleged their kids were being indoctrinated by secular worldviews and what they call LGBT propaganda.
We believe that, that the subjects, they should be able to withdraw from this type of subject. So the No Outsiders campaign, so we just want to able to have control over what they are being taught.
Speaking to a local Muslim activist, Shakil Afsar explained why he feels the petition received so much support.
I think it would have got a lot more signatures if there wasn't this pro-LGBT narrative in our society, where if you speak against them, you are completely shut down, locked up, and the keys thrown away. I think there would have been a lot more. And I think with the people who have signed, they are people who are at the forefront of understanding what's happening. There are many people who don't really understand the situation. They don't even really know what's happening until their children are coming home with these books. I believe that if there was a transparent media, this petition would have signatures in the millions.
So far, the protests have largely received negative coverage, with the establishment refusing to budge on the RSE curriculum. Activists believe this uncompromising stance could boil over to more parent protests in 2023. Robert Carter, London.
Yemenis are growing frustrated with the United Nations' failure to condemn the Saudi-led war on Yemen, or to hold them responsible for the ensued disastrous ramifications. This comes just days after the UN Special Envoy for Yemen, Hans Grundberg, addressed the United Nations Security Council about the situation in Yemen. While calling for an end to violence, Grundberg declined to condemn the ongoing Saudi artillery shelling that has killed or injured dozens of civilians in the northern province of Sada.
I call on the parties to respect international humanitarian law. Military activity, combined with negative rhetoric and escalatory political and economic measures, create a situation where a simple miscalculation could reignite a cycle of violence that will be difficult.
Grundberg also called for humanitarian aid to Yemen, but mentioned nothing about the lifting of the Saudi blockade, which is the main obstacle preventing vital aid and food supplies from entering the country. This military general we spoke with on the streets of the Yemeni capital says the United Nations is the root cause of all evil in Yemen.
The UN destroys every country they get involved in. Look at what they did in Iraq, Syria, Libya, and Sudan. As for Yemen, the United Nations and all of its envoys' efforts in Yemen have been directed at spying on Yemenis, instigating conflicts among Yemenis and fueling chaos and instability.
Some Yemenis are calling on their government to abandon all political talks with the UN. They accuse the UN of complicity with the Saudi-led coalition in the killing of Yemenis. The Yemeni government stated that if the blockade is not lifted and salaries are not paid, the only option left is war.
The Yemeni people and government have expressed that the 8-year Saudi-imposed siege on Yemen must be broken by any means necessary. This after years of failed political efforts to resolve the conflict by the United Nations, an entity which most Yemenis lost trust in and accused of supporting the Saudi military aggression on Yemen. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
Tehran has hosted the first International Congress on Influential Women. The 2-day event is underway in the Iranian capital with the participation of influential, active and elite women from almost 90 world countries. Addressing the Congress, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi called on the participating women at the Congress to benefit from the experiences of the Islamic Republic of Iran with regard to women's rights.
We hope that the participants of this Congress, through cooperation and interaction, will be able to take necessary measures for the rights of women in the world and benefit from the experiences of the Islamic Republic of Iran in the field of protecting women's rights and paying special attention to women's role in the society. I hope this Congress will prepare the ground for further cooperation among countries in this field.
The event is aimed at identifying, supporting and developing the abilities and capabilities of elite and influential women at national and international level.
Women are suffering worldwide. This is just because we have not been together. And most importantly, this is the very first time for the Islamic country of Iran to host such a big occasion. So I am so happy to be here, and I hope the relationship with our sisters, women in the world, we should work hard, very strongly, and look forward to the international world to assist women than ever before.
It is extremely important to integrate women in peace building
process. So this conference is extremely important because we know that we have peace threatened in many parts of the world. And when we look for solutions, women should be involved.
Special awards with international recognition are slated to be granted to influential women in three fields of science and technology, economic and social affairs.
The Congress International of the Women, it's very important for the women in the Islam. For the development, the communication, the country, for example, Algeria, the woman Algeria and the woman Iraq, and it take the relation very important because the Islam, it's number one.
The influential women have been selected from among housewives, women employees, female social activists, as well as competent women in digital technology, social media, science and technology, entrepreneurship, and those who are pioneers in areas of culture and charity affairs.
On the sidelines of the Congress, a memorandum of understanding was signed among Afghanistan's neighboring countries at the initiative of Iran's Vice President for Women and Family Affairs to help Afghan girls and women continue their education. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
The heads of the main EU institutions defended the 27-nation bloc's foreign policy during a debate in the European Parliament on Wednesday. They insisted that sending deadly weapons to Ukraine, costing billions of euro, is the only way to thwart Russia. Most lawmakers agree, but not all.
We see militarization, we see escalation. We are not really seeing a call for peace. We assume it will be the people who suffer the cost of sanctions.
Interest rates continue to rise in the eurozone and inflation remains extremely high. Sanctions against Moscow and the rapid move away from Russia's energy are the main reasons.
The cost of the living crisis affecting our European citizens unfortunately persists, and we are therefore concerned that the European Council conclusions fail to prioritise the support for our citizens.
Experts warn public support in the EU for the seemingly never-ending cash flow to Ukraine will eventually wane if the war persists, resulting in political consequences.
There can be a kind of danger, which is already looming, that very populistic parties, they can use this as an argument to say, look, this is something we have to cater for our own needs first, and then we have to see what's going to happen in Ukraine.
In an unprecedented departure from diplomacy on Wednesday, the European Council President Charles Michel accused authorities in Iran of operating a, quote, brutal regime. He says more sanctions against Tehran will be announced on Monday. Some lawmakers oppose the policy.
The EU and its partners never stop violating international law, going above multilateral institutions like the UN with their own parallel systems, including punishing millions of people around the world through our authoritarian unilateral sanction regime.
By insisting that rioters in Iran are peaceful protesters and by attempting to directly implicate the Islamic Republic in the Ukraine war, impartial analysts say the EU is being opportunistic, suggesting the new sanctions are trumped up and politically motivated. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
From hero to zero, and claps don't pay the bills. Some of the chants by nurses here and across the country on strike again in a dispute with government over not just pay, but patient safety. Emma has been a nurse for more than three decades.
For a long time, we've felt we haven't been able to give the care we want to give because we're so pressed for time, resources, simply just numbers on the ground. So I think for a long time, we've wanted things to change, and it's come to the point where this something has to change, and this is really our only option. Nothing else is working.
The reason behind that, more than 10 years of underfunding and neglect.
Across the country, the health service has been facing what's been described as an intolerable and unbearable strain due to a combination of COVID, the seasonal flu, and staff shortages, with some patients having to wait up to 24 hours for a bed inside a hospital such as this one.
That plus a record 7 million patients on the NHS waiting list, described as a national scandal.
The Royal College of Nursing Union demanded a 19% pay rise when they first went on strike last year, but has since cut that in half. Yet a deal is yet to be reached. The Health Secretary, James Cleverly, says the strikes put patients' lives at risk. Last week, the government introduced legislation that, if passed, will enable employers to sue unions and fire employees if they refuse to work on strike days.
Rather than talking about the pay negotiation, talking about safer staffing and the safety and quality of care that we're giving up and down the country in our hospitals, the government have gone down this sort of anti-strike, anti-trade union route. So once again, so it's interesting to talk about safe staffing levels on a strike day, but what about the other 365 days in the year when we have not enough nurses on duty, not enough doctors, not enough physiotherapists, cancellations of operations and delayed chemotherapy? What about those days? What about safer staffing on a normal NHS day?
The UK has been hit by months of public sector strikes from rail to mail, all of whom say they're in for the long haul. In the weeks ahead, more strikes are planned by nurses, paramedics, and ambulance drivers, with the Royal College of Nursing warning it'll be their biggest walkout yet if pay talks with the government do not progress soon. Saeed Purza, London.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the legal rights of man on wife. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of the legal rights of man is that the wife obeys the husband in the Islamic lifestyle. According to the teachings of the Islam, of the Quran and the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, we see that it is necessary for the woman to obey the husband, because according to the Islam, all the duties, all the hardship is on the shoulders of the man. He has to bring sustenance for the family. He has to provide the needs of the wife and children. And he has to work outside. The hard part of working outside from morning to night, maybe having two shifts in the day, maybe working 24 hours, it is all on the shoulders of the man and not the wife. And the duty of wife is to train kids, which is a very important duty. On top of that, even if she's working, if she has a job, if she's earning, the husband has no right over the earnings of the wife. And wife, whatever she's earning with the permission of the husband, if she's working somewhere, whatever she earns, it's solely and only for the wife, and husband cannot ask for the money from the wife. But on the other hand, Islam has said that because you got all these rights, therefore it is necessary that the wife must obey the husband. And therefore in the Quran we also see, the Quran says الرِّجَالُ قَوَّامُونَ عَلَى النِّسَى, that the men has the guardianship over the women, and they are the guardians of the family, and they have the guardianship. Therefore, it is necessary for the wife to obey husband in order to have a safe family life, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the men's legal right on woman, which is that she should obey her husband in the Islamic lifestyle. Now, the teachings in the Islam has emphasized on the obedience of the husband by the wife if it is not against the teachings of God or Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The very necessary point is the wife should obey the husband only in halal matters. only in the allowable matters, and it should be in line with the teachings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. For example, we see that in some families, the woman or the girl, she's observing hijab. But after some time, when she gets married, her husband forces her to not to observe hijab. Now, this not observing hijab is against the Islamic teachings. Therefore, she should not follow such things. Maybe if the woman is praying 5-time prayers after the marriage, husband says that I don't like this, she should not follow such things. She cannot obey such orders or the recommendations of the husband after the marriage. The only matter where she has to obey the husband because he is the guardian